This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money Tuesday, November 7th, as we say hi here, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Hope you're having a nice start to your week. Better than the Jets, of course, we'll get to Monday night as we wrapped up week 9 in the NFL. We say hi. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles, the dangerous duo, Amal Shaw. Of course, Dustin Sweetelson, downtown Las Vegas, Fremont Street, the D, chilling at Bar Canada. If you want to stop by and say hello, just set it up quickly, boys. Couple of things. We had 113 games college basketball yesterday. Thomas Gable, race and sports book director at the Borgata, sends us plays pretty much every day for the college hoop season as he makes his own power rankings. He went 2-1, could have won the Cal State game late to go 3-0, but 2-1, he sent over two plays, 15 college basketball plays. You mentioned Auburn and Baylor boys on the board today. We'll get to those coming up. What's fascinating is we've been jockeying the JMU football team in the Fun Belt, the Sun Belt. They're 9-0. They're 21st ranked. JMU's on a heater right now because JMU basketball beat 4th-ranked Michigan State. Spartans yesterday as a 16.5-point dog, 79-76. We'll get into the college hoops. I know Amal Shaw has a play there. We've got Maction college football today. You got three games in the MAC coming up later this evening. Adam Burke, Mr. Mac, Mr. Ohio is going to stop by customarily on a Tuesday in the final hour to talk a little Maction coming up in just a bit. No NBA with the in-game tournament. We do have 10 games on the ice. Of course, we mentioned the NFL. I've got something for you two as I say hi to the boys. I want to get into, I saw somebody do this, and I thought it was a good little experiment because we were talking so much yesterday about CJ Stroud and just what a season he's having as the number 2 overall pick. I wanted to go through halfway through the year and regrade this year's draft. Thought we'd have a little fun with that as we say hi to the boys. Of course, going to start with the 27-6 winner for the Chargers last night over the Jets. Got plenty of sound coming out of this one, Amal Shaw. Two field goals for the Jets against the 31st ranked pass defense of the Chargers. Disgusting. And I mean that. Disgusting performance by J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. What's up? Welcome.
Well, I'm going to need an intervention here with this team. Couldn't quit them before the game started. Took them into halftime when they were plus 12.5 for the game. Thought maybe get a little fight out of this team. But, you know, actually, Patrick, they scored 6 points. I thought they were going to win this game 6-3. They only gave up 197 yards. How the hell do you give up 27 points in an NFL game when your defense only gives up a buck 97? Special teams with the punt return for a touchdown, which we saw out of the Chargers, and of course that 2-yard drive late, but just the colossal failures. It's not just Zach Wilson, the offensive line. Garrett Wilson had a couple of drops along the way, just not making key plays when the opportunity presents itself from an offensive standpoint. This team is in serious trouble, guys. I don't see Aaron Rodgers rushing back if you're going to get these types of performances from the O-line.
Yeah, and it's, you mentioned it's not just Zach Wilson. It's not just the offensive line. There's a lot to it, and a lot of that has to do with Nathaniel Hackett. You just mentioned Aaron Rodgers. He brought over his boy, Nathaniel Hackett, to run the offense there with the Jets. His offense is unimaginative. It was 32nd in scoring last year with Denver before he got booted. They're 30th in points per this year with the Jets. They're 31st in yards per with the Jets. It's just a bland, vanilla offense to watch. We'll have a little fun here as we get started with the Chargers and Jets, both sitting 4-4 moving forward. Obviously, a team and the Chargers buoyed from that performance yesterday. Although, as Amal said, Dustin Sweetelson, as we say hi for the first time today, not necessarily an overly promising performance by the lightning bolts either.
Nepotism Nathaniel, that should be his new name because he only gets jobs because
Nepo
of Aaron
Nate?
Rodgers. Yeah, literally only got the Denver job because they were like, hey, are you friends with Aaron Rodgers? And he said, yeah, I can convince him to come here. You should hire me. Well, he got stuck with Russell Wilson. That's what happened there. Now he's in New York, where Aaron Rodgers ended up as well. And it's the same exact story. The guy has no idea what he's doing in designing a scheme. It is literally the same plan every week with the same bad quarterback, Zach Wilson. Every week. and nothing has changed for this offense this year. And by the way, nothing's changed with Zach Wilson's play since day one in the NFL.
Patrick, real quick, before we move forward off of Nathaniel Hackett, there was an article in the LA Times, and this is going back almost 20 years. Bill Plaschke had written an article that said, Paul Hackett, his dad, was the worst coach in L.A. sports history. That includes the Bruins, the Dodgers, the Lakers, the Raiders, the Rams, everybody involved. What does that tell you about Nathaniel Hackett? Why were we expecting some sort of different result in this situation when he was a colossal failure at other stops and his dad was a terrible coach as well?
Yeah, I mean, the Jets last night, it's not a good football team. It's interesting they had 1-3 straight, but let's go through this. So we mentioned 2 field goals against a terrible pass D, also allowed 8 sacks. They were 3 of 17, the Jets, on third down. They're 22% on the year, which is about as bad as it gets over the last 45, 50 years. They've got 8, count them, 8 offensive touchdowns through 8 games. It's almost impossible to be this inept offensively. And, you know, 61 of those passing yards from Zach Wilson, we're showing 263, came on the final drive when the Chargers were just like, here, you can have whatever you want. So if you just take a look at the numbers, 33 of 49, 2 fumbles lost for Zach Wilson, but 263, say, it's not bad if you're doing a little box score breakdown. The numbers don't tell the story. He's about as bad as I've seen. He is missing open receivers left and right. He has zero pocket presence. That's the one thing. When they were – and Douglas was analyzing the quarterback position, they drafted Wilson 2 overall, Amal. You know, I understand in that BYU offense essentially was 6 plays, and 5 of the plays had everybody just go routing. However, he just never had to show anything as far as presence in the pocket, and that is obviously a skill that's – innate, and he just does not have it.
Yeah, I think you summarized him perfectly. I was watching that game last night. I couldn't figure out, is it the offensive line that's allowing everybody through, or is it his propensity to hold on to the football too long? You know, there was a play, I think it was in the second quarter they were driving, and you see him flip the ball to Breece Hall. I thought it was an opportunity for him to be able to run on the third down and 9 or so, and he doesn't do that. He ends up in a situation where he gets tackled by the defender coming up on the play. I thought it would have been much closer to the first down if he kept it himself. But he just doesn't seem to have the awareness that's needed for a quarterback. And you brought up another good point. Just missing targets that are open. Throws that you would expect an NFL quarterback, let alone a number 2 pick in the draft, to be able to make. That's the bigger issue here with this team, Patrick. When you look at it, it's not just the incompetency of the offense, but it's throws that you would expect almost any quarterback 1 through 32 to be able to make. And he's just not able to do it.
It's a weird vibe because, as you mentioned, Amal, and I know, Dustin, you want to jump in here, but quickly, there's such a dichotomous situation with the Jets because the defense is really good. I mean, the defense sacked Herbert 5 times, held him to a career-low 136 passing yards. So, look, it got to the point where, and let's be fair, Aikman and who's in the booth with them? Oh, Joe Buck. Not exactly Maniscalco in Seinfeld. However, they were doing their best Laurel and Hardy. They were just clowning, not just Zach Wilson, but they were clowning the Jets offense. Aikman, who I think likes probably at libations, he was getting down late in the game, just absolutely killing the Jets, and that's what it's gotten to. It's a 4-4 team with Rodgers throwing balls before the game started with a little hope because of the defense, but it's just an offense that is just – and if he doesn't make a change, if Saleh doesn't make – and we're going to hear from Saleh. If he doesn't make a change at OC, that is – he's legitimately letting you know, Dustin, that Aaron Rodgers is running the show because you have to make a change. This is an offense that is decrepit.
Yeah, I mean, look, the hallmark of this Jets season so far is Aaron Rodgers went down, but they won opening night. They lost only by 3 to Kansas City. They beat a bad Denver team. They somehow beat the Eagles. And then when they took on the Giants, they beat Tyrod Taylor and Tommy DeVito. So that's the Jets season so far. The offense is awful. The defense is great. Here's what Robert Saleh had to say when he was asked if he's concerned about the difference between the two units.
No, it's a team game. You want all 3 phases. Obviously, special teams giving up 7 is not good. It's been a pretty dominant group, I feel like, all year. And it's just to let up that touchdown to that kid. And he's a special returner, which we knew going in. But Yeah, we got a championship defense. I know we do. We got a young offense, a lot of moving parts. And is it, and I get the frustration. Trust me, I do. But we just got to keep trying to find ways to get better. And we got a game coming up Sunday. Got a quick turnaround. So
the punt return for a touchdown, this is when you know it's bad, boys. When the Chargers return a punt for a touchdown, when you're thinking, if you're betting the Jets, well, the game's over unless they get a defensive score, because they're not catching up offensively down a touchdown. That's an issue right now. If you're at home and you're already thinking, all right, if they're behind it, because you wanted to, we were all on the Jets essentially, but if you want to all back the Jets in that situation, it's just going to be a slugfest where you just grind out a turnover and get a score with Breece Hall. If you give up a special team score, you're done.
You're absolutely right. I mean, when they gave up that punt return for a touchdown, I'm like, you know, Herbert's going to do well. But in reality, he didn't play that great. This team offensively wasn't great. The Jets gave up, out of 13 drives, they gave up two drives of more than 50 yards. I would expect if you give up a drive for 68 yards and it winds up only in a field goal, and you give up one touchdown drive of 50 yards, you're going to walk out of that game with a W. I wish Saleh would just come out of this post-game press conference and go, look, guys, and he's right. They do have a Super Bowl caliber defense. Our offense sucks. There's just no other way to put it. This team is terrible. I'm sorry to the paying customers. Stop trying to sugarcoat something that we can all see. Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder can see it. This offense is horrific. I mean, it is beyond bad, and I'm telling you right now, their best place to punt on first down, maybe they get a turnover on the punt return like they almost had last night.
Go ahead, big guy. What do you got?
Just saying, Josh Dobbs was out there for the taking. You wanted to make the playoffs this year. Could have had Josh Dobbs the rest of the year. Definitely an upgrade.
Oh, he resides in a different galaxy than Zach Wilson. We'll hear from the quarterback and more. What's next for the Chargers and Jets moving forward? Sharp Money just getting started.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, it's DraftKings right now for new customers using the promo code SHARP. Bet $5, get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Again, new customers use that promo code SHARP, and all customers at DraftKings, a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. DraftKings, the crown is yours. We got you back here on Sharp Money. I'm Amal Shaw. I'm Patrick Maher. Going to welcome in the great Jay Billis, ESPN college basketball analyst. You can find him, a must-follow on Twitter, of course, at Jay Billis. The book, Toughness, which you can find on Amazon. Hi, Jay. Thank you so much for doing this. We appreciate it as we kick off the college basketball season. And you were tweeting about Michigan State 79-76 loss to JMU. What was the main takeaway? My assumption is Izzo uses this for motivation, but what'd you see in this one?
Yeah, they weren't very good. I think Michigan State's got a top five, top 10 team personnel-wise, but they must have missed 15 free throws. I watched the tape this morning of the game. I had it on last night, but I was going back and forth among a bunch of different games. And when I watched the tape this morning, I mean, they missed a bunch of free throws. They went 1 of 20 from three. I mean, so they knocked down a few free throws. They win the game. But, they put a ton of pressure on their defense by not finishing plays. I didn't think they weren't as aggressive as I expected them to be, having a veteran team. But, you've seen years in the past where Michigan State has started out slowly and they're there at the end. So maybe this was, I'm not a big believer in wake-up calls, but maybe this was a wake-up call for them because they're far better than they played. And James Madison's good. You know, that's a good opening game to play. It's just not a good opening game to lose.
Jay, number one, Kansas was dominant last night, but DeJuan Harris now takes over running the show for Jalen Wilson. Is he good enough to lead this team when you look at the guys he can feed with Dickinson, McCullough, and Adams?
Yeah, he's more than good enough. He's one of the top five point guards in the country and the best defensive point guard in the country. Outstanding passer. He's been a little, I guess you'd call him a reluctant shooter his first few years there. But I think he can shoot it when he's open and make them. And I think he has to be a little more aggressive. That's sort of the one question mark I have about Kansas as the number one team is, do they shoot it well enough from the perimeter? And, Hunter Dickinson, who transferred in from Michigan, you mentioned, he was their leading scorer last night, lefty. he can step away and knock down threes. He's a little bit vulnerable in pick and roll defense, but do they have other guys that can consistently make shots? It's going to be interesting to see.
You hear the voice. It's synonymous with college basketball, and it's back, Jay Billis. So you've got a 2-12 matchup on Friday with Duke and Arizona, but in the Billis Index, it's a 2-10 matchup. You've got Duke 2, you've got Arizona 10, and your little top 10 here. Help us with a scout on these two teams.
Well, Duke is really talented, and they've got some experienced players back, led by Jeremy Roach and Kyle Filipowski, and Mark Williams didn't play in their, Mark Mitchell didn't play in their first game. I expect that he'll be back. Really versatile lefty that can guard multiple positions. Duke is not as proficient shot blocking, protecting the rim this year. I mean, they lost Derek Lively II, who's doing great with Dallas. So they're going to have to be more creative defensively to try to keep Kyle Filipowski out of foul trouble. So my guess is they'll trap the post a little bit more, maybe trap some ball screens and try to be a little bit more disruptive so that he's not having to pick up extra fouls around the rim. And Arizona's, they're big again. They've got a lot of size. Umar Ballo's their best player. But their guards are very good. They got Caleb Love transferred in from North Carolina. They put up 122 points in their first game. They played Morgan State, but still, I hadn't seen anybody else put up 122. So Tommy Lloyd runs great offense, and they're going to score. So that's a fabulous game right out of the gate for both Duke and Arizona. It's a real challenge for Arizona to have to go on the road and play in that environment.
Jay, John Shire, what has allowed him to step in for Coach K and not skip a beat in recruiting, actually even elevated a little bit based on what he's been able to bring in the last couple of years?
Well, he'd been doing it for a while under Coach K. I think he'd been an assistant there for 9 years, and he was essentially the coach in waiting for an entire year. So he had a little bit of a head start, I would say, of everybody knowing it was going to be him. And so he was able to get prepared and have a really good first recruiting class. I mean, he won, 27 games last year. They wound up getting beat in the tournament in the second round, I believe, by Tennessee in just an ultra-physical game. I think they were better than that. I think I thought they were a Sweet 16, Elite 18, maybe even Final Four with the right draw. But that sort of physicality for that young of a team got him in the second round. John's really mature for his age. He's very young. I think he's in his early mid-30s, whatever it is. But he's young, but he's really smart, and he gets it. He's got a great demeanor. He's great with the players. But he did some things last year that first-year coaches don't usually do. They went undefeated at home. They won the ACC Tournament Championship, ranked all year long. It was really, really an impressive debut. And he's got an outstanding recruiting class again. Then he winds up getting Cooper Flagg coming in next year, who is the number one recruit in the country. So he's got the talent pipeline continuing to flow.
At Jay Billis on Twitter, you talked about three teams that could make a run this year. How about last year with FAU, Jay? They return all five starters. Are they going to be a threat again?
Yes, they're going to be really good. I didn't anticipate them being this good last year. I watched them during the season, but I wasn't looking at them saying there's a Final Four team. I thought, hey, they can beat somebody in the tournament, but Final Four, I mean, they were, and that's how thin the line is for a team like Florida Atlantic, who's really good. But they were a stupid turnover by Memphis away from getting beat in the first round. And nobody be talking about them. That's how big this tournament is for, sort of establishing who you are and who you can be. But they took advantage of the run, and I think Dusty May is a great coach. And he was I think people probably know this by now after all the publicity they got, but he was a manager under Bob Knight at Indiana and coached with Mike White at Florida and all that. He's got a great pedigree. And he's another guy like John Shire. He's got a great demeanor with the players. And they play really hard. They are very difficult to guard because of how versatile they are. And while they're small, they've got two really good big guys. And, Vlad Golden is a seven-footer and a really good player, played at Texas Tech. So they're legit. But the hard part, I mean, they could take a few more losses. They got a better schedule regular season this year, so they could take a couple more losses this year than they had last year and be a better team. And they can be a better team and lose in the second round. That's sort of the difficulty of the NCAA tournament.
Jay, you've got Purdue at number four. Two-part question here. Does Matt Painter finally get over the hump and get this team to a Final Four? And can Zach Edey become the first player since Ralph Sampson to repeat as Naismith Player of the Year?
I like Edey's chances just because he's so efficient. And at his size, 7'4", you know, he stays out of foul trouble. He's easy to play with. Ridiculous. He makes his free throws and he gets fouled way more than the referees call. And that's not a knock on the referees. It's just when you got somebody that big, it's like Shaq in the NBA. He got fouled way more than got called. LeBron, things like that. The sort of physical anomalies don't get the calls that smaller players seem to, at least in my judgment. And I don't think I'm alone there. Can Matt Painter get over the hump? Yes, he can. I mean, you guys remember in 2019 when it Carson Edwards, I mean, they were in the Final Four right before Virginia wound up pulling off that miracle at the end of the game when Mamadi Diakite hit that shot at the buzzer to send it into overtime. So they've been right there. I think the hard part is going to be, and I'm sure Matt has acknowledged this publicly. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen all his quotes and everything, but they've owned the fact that 3 years in a row they've lost a double-digit season in the tournament. And one of them was in a later round. They lost in a later round to St. Peter's a couple years ago. But, you know, last year in the first round, I mean, that was kind of inexplicable to lose to Fairleigh Dickinson the way they did. They played horribly. And not to take anything away from Fairleigh Dickinson, but Purdue was horrible. And so how do you do that? How do you, like, get over those emotional scars when you get back? And, you know, I mentioned Virginia haven't beaten them. And that was a year after Virginia had been beaten by UMBC in the first round. They were the first number one overall seed to lose to a 16 seed, Purdue being the second. So, you know, I thought Tony Bennett did a really good job with his team of owning it. But people forget, in the year after they lost to UMBC, they were down 14 in the first half of their first-round game. And that's an emotional hurdle to get over, and Purdue's got to get over it.
You're an institution. We look forward to the call on Friday. Duke, Arizona, Jay Billis, College Basketball, ESPN. Thanks, Jay. Appreciate you.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, at Jay Billis on Twitter. We're going to come back. Emery Hunt talking NFL next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, DraftKings, bet $5, get $200 in bonus bets instantly if you're a new customer using the promo code SHARP, S-H-A-R-P. Also, a no-sweat same-game parlay every day for all bettors over at DraftKings. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Jake Butt's going to join us now. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. He's got bright future in broadcast, former Michigan tight end, of course. Just called Wisconsin, Indiana. He hit the jackpot this week. Lucky Jake, he's on the Iowa Rutgers call. Why don't we start here, Jake? Hi, at JBooty88 on Twitter. Why don't we start? You had the Wisconsin, Indiana call. Indiana 20-14 winner. What has gone wrong for Wisconsin this year?
I mean, the number one thing is injuries. That's what killed them this past week. And really it started Ches Belusi went down earlier in the year. I think that may have been an even bigger injury than Braylon Allen. But of course they were without Braylon Allen last week. They were without Chimray Dike, their wide receiver. They've been without Tanner Mordecai, their quarterback. So you combine that with the fact that it's a brand new head coach, a brand new offensive system. They go from Wisconsin, which is 22 personnel, tight ends and fullbacks, to an air raid system. They don't even carry fullbacks on their roster. They go from a 3-4 Jim Leonard defense to kind of a blend 3-4, 4-2-5, 3-3-5 hybrid. So they're a program that's in transition, and then that's always going to be tough anyways. But then you combine the injuries, and it just puts you in a really, really tough spot. Certainly just didn't have enough to overcome it this past weekend.
Jake, two-part question here. The one, the stuff going around surrounding Michigan, does anything come about in terms of this season, in terms of impacting them and their chance for the college football playoff? And then more importantly, on Saturday in State College, Michigan's a 4.5-point favorite. I find this a little bit surprising based on how the Wolverines have played. How do you look at this matchup in terms of how Penn State's offense matches up against Michigan's D?
Well, to answer your first part, that's the question I think everybody's waiting to see. We kind of know what we know at this point, and I think it's been established that Connor Stallions, you know, the way he acted, you know, some of the things by sending people in person to film, like that's clearly over the line, and now he's not with the program anymore. Now the question is, you know, does the Big Ten act? Does the NCAA act? If they do, what's Michigan's response? If they do act, what is it? So it seems like there's going to be a little back and forth regardless, but I'm sure we'll all be watching that as it unfolds. As far as this weekend goes, that's the other big question here is, you know, I think when Michigan and Penn State have the ball, that's a completely separate story than when Penn State has the football, because Penn State's offense has really struggled to move the ball at times, certainly explosively this year. And when they faced the best defense they faced all season against Ohio State, they really, really struggled to move the ball. Well, Michigan's coming to town with a defense that's on par with the way Ohio State plays defense. That's going to be the interesting thing. Now, the question is did they do enough last weekend against Maryland where they put up 50-plus points and got some nice contributions from the receivers and Catron Allen? Is that enough to boost them this weekend against a good Michigan defense? I don't know. I think the early downs will tell us a big story. I don't think Penn State wants to live in a third and long situation. I don't know that Drew Aller's there yet as a quarterback to overcome a lot of late down, third down adversity against this Michigan defense. So I know Penn State doesn't necessarily probably want to run the ball right into this front, but I think they're going to have to get themselves into favorable down and distance.
Big Ten Network analyst Jake Butt joining us here on Sharp Money. You mentioned Sparty. They head to Columbus this weekend. That number right now, 31.5 with Ohio State laying it. So obviously not much of a matchup. Question for you, Jake. Who are you hearing as a potential replacement there in East Lansing at head coach?
I'm not hearing anything too much right now. I can tell you one thing is when Urban Meyer's name has got bounced around, I can tell you I don't think that's going to happen. I think Michigan State is probably being a little bit patient to see what names become available too down the stretch of the season. They're in an inflection point in their program where this next coaching hire is extremely important, because you risk, you know, going into some really dark years by committing to the wrong coach and that guy not being able to revive the program. And at that point, you know, you'll have, a decade of tough, tough times. And it makes it hard to kind of dig yourself out of that. So ideally, Michigan State can find the next D'Antonio that can, and what D'Antonio did such a good job of was taking, you know, 3- and 4-star recruits and getting them to play way above their high school rating. No one leveraged external disrespect better than D'Antonio. I think that's the kind of identity of the coach still need. You know, I talked to Matt Rhule at Nebraska earlier this year, and, you know, he had success at Temple. He had success at Baylor. Now he's the head coach at Nebraska. He brought up a great point. You have to learn how to win given each specific situation. The same is true for Michigan State. There's a certain identity that wins up there in East Lansing. I think part of that is running the ball. You know, they've had some great physical O-lines and running the football, and then playing good, sound Big Ten defense. They've kind of gotten away from that in recent years. That's the steps they need to take to get back on track.
Jake, you mentioned Matt Rhule. How do you see this Nebraska program? If anybody sat through and watched that Michigan State-Nebraska game on Saturday, wasn't overly impressed with the Huskers' offense, but from a big picture standpoint, do you think they're trending in the right direction?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're absolutely trending in the right direction. Shoot, they're one win away. They're one win away from a bowl game. That's a pretty damn good spot. I know last week was pretty frustrating for the Cornhuskers, but look, the defense has taken major, major strides under Tony White. Like, that is a revamped defense. Even the special teams, which has been a huge issue in the past, has taken some strides. Offensively, it's the same issue where every single week, I'm sure Nebraska fans are sitting here saying, man, we just have to stop turning the ball over. Man, we just have to stop. And then they do it every single week. You know, I think part of that is frankly, as tough as this is, it's a business. You're going to need to get new guys in there that understand how to take care of the football. Right now, that's not the case. Jeff Sims has a history of turnover problems going all the way back to his time at Georgia Tech. I was a little bit interested when they brought him in. So the biggest thing Nebraska could do offensively, it's not about adding anything. They don't need to add anything right now. They need to lose the things that are working against them. They need to lose the negative. That's a net positive for them. Taking care of the football, Nebraska would already be at 6 wins if they could just take care of the football. If not 7, if not 8, that's the biggest thing.
Okay, Jake, I'm putting you on the spot, but you can handle it. The College Football Committee, their second rankings come out tonight. Let's hear the Jake Butt top 5 college football right now.
I what do I think the committee's going to do, or my?
No. I don't care about the committee. I care about you. What would you say right
okay,
now?
Okay. Yeah, so I think the committees get – well, real quick, I think nothing changes. I think the one through six really is going to be the exact same. To me, I would have Michigan at 1, Georgia at 2, Ohio State at 3, and I would have Washington at 4. Though I think as the season plays out, if I had to pick right now, I would pick Oregon to beat Washington. I always say, hey, home field advantage counts for something. I think Oregon's a better team, but Washington got them at home, and I give credit to the team that won. To me, Michigan's looked like the best team throughout this season. Certainly Georgia. I would not be mad at you if you had Georgia as the number one team in the country. I just think Michigan has looked more dominant. I don't care about the schedule as much as others. Ohio State, they have some of the best wins in college football, though Notre Dame is kind of folding a little bit. So maybe that we look at that win a little bit differently. And then I put Washington over Florida State just because of what the Pac-12 has been this year. It has been a gauntlet out there, and Washington continues to win and win and win. I wonder if they'll be able to finish the season undefeated because the defense has been shaky at times. But that's my top 4 right there.
Jake, I'll give you 3 options. You can add somebody else if you like. Heisman right now, Penix plus 160, Bo Nix plus 180, J.J. McCarthy 8-1, or do you have someone else?
Yeah, those are the 3 right there. And frankly, I know we don't want to admit that this is true, but team success certainly plays a factor. You know, like your team has to win. Your team kind of has to be in the big moment to have a good chance at this. I think it's probably coming from one of those 3 guys. I thought maybe we'd get a Marvin Harrison Jr. in there, but he almost had no room for error, and he didn't have like a Heisman-type performance last week. I mean, you could maybe throw Marvin Harrison Jr. in there if he goes off for 250 yards against Michigan and leads his team to victory. But those are the 3 right there, and I think we'll have to observe how each of their teams plays down the stretch. You know, each of those guys still has to maintain that minimum statistical excellence, but it's probably one of those 3.
Jake Butt, Big Ten Network analyst, Jay Booty, 88. Iowa Rutgers this weekend. We're going to take a shot for every touchdown scored, so we'll be driving sober. Jake, have a good call. Thank you.
All right, guys. Yeah, thanks. We'll see you later.
All right. Enjoy the game. Adam Burke is next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money, as we welcome you back on a Tuesday, and it's good to have our guy back. Berkey Tuesdays here, of course. VSIN managing editor at Skating Tripods on Twitter. I'm Patrick Maher, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, and joining the boys sandwich in between at Bar Canada, downtown Las Vegas, is the one and only managing editor over at VSiN, Adam Burke. And let me give you an idea of what you can expect from Berkey right now. Then he can break down the website for us. You've got Maction tonight. He's got plays and write-ups on all 3 games coming up tonight. He's got his college basketball best bets today, and I believe he's going to have one every single day. He got two bets tonight. He's got his top NFL survivor picks for week 10. He's got his NFL week 10 opening line report up there. He's got his week 11 college football schedule and situational betting spots to look for over at VSiN.com. Berkey, what did I miss? Fill me in.
College football power ratings go up on Sunday night. So my updated 1 through 133 or however many there are, and then also my game spreads for the week. So you got almost all of it. I appreciate that, Patrick.
And the college football pod with our buddy Tim Murray as well. So Berkey is a busy man. And you got a special shout out from our guy Bill AD today, because you are. Did you know that you're the Mac expert because you're from Ohio? Congratulations on that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I was unaware of that. Honestly, handicapping the MAC is brutal because most of these teams are bad. So you just don't really know game in and game out who's going to be less bad. So that's kind of what the conference has sort of become at this point in time, especially with the NIL and the transfer portal. Like, anybody who's good in that conference, they just get scooped up by somebody else.
We were just talking, I believe it was you, big guy, that brought up Kent State. So remember, Kent State's head coach, Sean Lewis, bailed on Kent State to go take the OC job with Dion at Colorado. He just got demoted for Pat Shurmur. Like, first off, did you guys find it odd? Amal, I'll start with you here. Did you find it odd that you'd leave a head coaching position in a pretty good conference? I mean, it's the MAC, to go take an OC job. And maybe he was promised that head coaching job in waiting when Dion would bail on Boulder. But now it's starting to get messy there.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, these coaching waitings tend not to work out that well. Remember, Will Muschamp was supposed to be the coach in waiting in Austin for a long time. And I'm with you, Patrick. When he made that move, I couldn't figure out why he chose to make that decision. From a salary standpoint, it was probably higher going to be the OC at Colorado than it was the head coach at Kent State. Because Kenny Burns right now is making about, I forgot what the exact amount is, but I know it's less than $1 million. So that was an interesting move from my perspective.
I mean, I think you go and you coach Shedeur Sanders, right? I mean, I think that was kind of the thought process there for him. And again, it probably was a financially motivated thing where he'd make more being an OC at a Power 5 than he would being the head coach at Kent State. And look, I mean, Kent State is a program that, you know, good, decent athletics. Basketball team's good, but, you know, football, it's kind of hit or miss.
5 years, $2.7 million for old Kenny Burns. And Sean Lewis would have been a smart job to maybe bring a few offensive linemen with him. He thought he was going to be the next head coach of Colorado.
Yeah, I think so. Let's get to at least one of these games tonight. And, Big Guy, I think you have a play on Central and Western. But Ohio and Buffalo, that tonight, Ohio's laying 7.5 on the road at Buffalo, Burke, and 44 on the total. I believe you went under here with Ohio and Buffalo.
Yeah, this is an underplay for me. I mean, Curtis Rourke is, you know, he's not as good as his brother Nathan, but, you know, he's done pretty well there at Ohio. The problem is this season, coming off the torn ACL, completion percentage is down 6%. He's not really running as much as he was. Maybe he doesn't have the same skill position guys at the wide receiver position. So Ohio has struggled offensively. They're 97th in yards per play in the country, but defensively, they're 12th. So they've been really good on defense. Part of that is because the MAC has a lot of bad offenses as well. But I think Buffalo's a really bad offense. So I don't think that the Bulls do a whole lot on the Bobcats here tonight. And Ohio just doesn't create a lot of explosive plays. So I like the under in that one. It was 44.5 a little bit earlier in the week. A lot of 44s out there now.
Yeah, real quick, just to add to it, Patrick, we're going to have wind about 13 miles an hour with a light rain. Could be a little bit of a factor here in this game. And you mentioned it with Adam mentioned it, just the inconsistency. Wiggles, who's their top receiver for Ohio, he's a transfer from Ohio State, so he got some decent talent there. But this Buffalo Bulls team, since Lance Leopold left, has just gone completely backwards.
Big guy, you got to play in Kalamazoo. Shout to Derek Jeter. Western Michigan lane 3, hosting the Chips Central. 58 on the total.
Yeah, you know, I was in between whether I was going to lay it with Western at home or go with the total, and Burke kind of solidified it for me. It's really hard to back one of these teams. They're both so bad, but they're both really bad defensively, which is why I think the over is the play at 58. You've got a team in Western. They run a really up-tempo offense. 21st in plays per game, 75 plays per game, 25th in rush rate, where Central Michigan's D-line is 28th in inline yards, 125th in stuff rate, so they are not good against the run. Buckley, the running back for Western Michigan, coming off a 97-yard performance, or he's averaging 97 yards per game. They are averaging 26 points per game on offense and dead last in the league at giving up 32.8 on defense. Central Michigan has gone 12-3 in November since 2019. They need to win to keep bowl eligibility a possibility. They ran for 331 against Northern Illinois a week ago. Luke's, their running back, went for 202. Despite being good rushing attacks, I think because they play at a fast pace and both defenses stink, we'll go over 58.
Hey, Adam, you know why you'd like Western Michigan, Kalamazoo, Michigan? Why do you think you'd like it?
Well, it's pretty close to Grand Rapids, right? So it's decent beer
town. GR is close, yes. But also, if you're from Michigan, Western is known because Bell's Brewery is there. Ah. And also a bunch of microbreweries that are awesome in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Just a thought, if you and I ever want to take a road trip and want to hit up the zoo, Kalamazoo, do you have a play here tonight?
No, I don't have a play in that one, and I don't like anything in Ball State, Northern Illinois either. Although I will say Northern Illinois is averaging over 7 yards per play on offense in their conference games here. So we'll see if Ball State's able to slow them down. This is a live betting opportunity, I think. If NIU is just marching, Ball State's offense is not good. They're not going to be able to keep up here. So if you see NIU having a lot of success, maybe they leave some points on the field, miss field goals, turnovers on downs, stuff like that, then maybe you get involved with Northern Illinois here from a live standpoint.
Yeah, Ball State averages less than 17 points per game, Patrick. I think it's going to be a real slog for their offense in this one. NIU with an opportunity to get to 500 here tonight.
I could teach classes at Ball State.
What's that, big guy?
I could teach classes at Ball State.
We didn't get a chance. That's Dustin Sweetelson for those keeping score at home. We didn't get a chance to catch up with you after the Rangers. How about Bruce Bochy just rolling out of bed and winning another World Series, the first for the Rangers? What were your takeaways there from kind of the postseason, looking ahead to next year, Major League Baseball?
Well, you know, honestly, I think it's a really fascinating discussion, especially in light of what's happened this week, where the Cubs basically bought Craig Counsell out from under the Brewers. You know, you have the Guardians with a new manager, Stephen Vogt. You have the Mets with a new manager as well. I think it's really interesting to see how these teams are trying to figure out exactly what a manager is worth. And the Rangers clearly found out what a manager is worth with what Bruce Bochy was able to do here. Just pushing all the right buttons, apparently being a really good communicator with the players. And they were phenomenal in the postseason. And I think the manager has a really big impact on the playoffs. Maybe not so much the regular season, but certainly the playoffs. So for the Rangers, I mean, kudos to them. I'm not surprised that Arizona ran out of gas. It's a shame because the one really, really, really good start Zach Gallen gave them in the playoffs, you know, was in that series. So, you know, I wasn't really surprised to see the outcome. I just wish I had gone with a fourth barrel going against the Diamondbacks because I did it 3 times and lost. And then, of course, I didn't do it in the World Series.
How about takeaways last night? The Chargers and Jets, both 4-4. I mean, the Zach Wilson situation, I'm sure you heard it, Berkey. Derwin James went up to Aaron Rodgers and was like, when are you coming back? And Rodgers said, give me a couple of weeks or give me a few weeks. If they're still in the mix, the assumption is we'll see Rodgers, but that's the question because be quarterback right now for the Jets and that offense is just putrid, to say the least.
Well, they're not alone. I mean, there's a lot of bad offenses out there in the NFL, a lot of bad quarterback play right now. I do like Robert Saleh saying, well, that's nowhere near the worst game that Zach Wilson's played, yeah. Which is always a great vote of confidence in your starting quarterback when you come up with that. Look, I mean, the Jets, obviously, you know, they continue to have a defense that's very, you know, solid. I mean, they held Justin Herbert to 136 yards passing, had 5 sacks of their own, but they just – Zach Wilson was not the guy when they drafted him, and he's clearly not the guy now. And hopefully for their sake, Rodgers has some sort of ridiculous recovery here, and he is able to come back because this is a feisty team that's going to stay in a lot of games. They can't score effectively.
If Rodgers is healthy enough, not completely to back to where he once was, could this team potentially chase Miami and Buffalo down? Because neither of them have seemed to overwhelm when the competition's greater.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, Buffalo's defense is bad right now with the injuries to White and Milano. That's something that they really haven't been able to overcome, and the offense just looks kind of all out of sorts. I realize that, you know, Miami has struggled when they've stepped up in class, but the thing of it is they're not going to step up in class a whole lot more during the regular season. You know, they've already gotten the Chiefs game out of the way, the Eagles game out of the way. I mean, yeah, they get the Ravens on the road. They get the Bills one more time, and then they've got, you know, a game here against the Cowboys, which, I mean, who knows what they'll look like by that time. So I think the Dolphins are still going to win this division because they're going to beat up on the inferior teams. What will they do come playoff time? That's a much bigger question, but I think it's clear, pretty clearly Miami's division to lose right now.
Bettors already got their bump with Antonio Pierce, you know, that first game with the Raiders. However, will the momentum continue? Do you think the bookmakers have it right next Sunday night with the Jets laying a point and a half at Vegas, Burke?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's hard to kind of project out if Aiden O'Connell can consistently get the job done at quarterback, especially now facing a Jets defense that is, you know, definitely better than what he faced last week. But at the same time, I mean, Jets on a short week, long travel out to Vegas. You don't love that situation for them. And for the Raiders, I mean, what if this is a decent team that was just being held back by Josh McDaniels and Mick Lombardi and some of the other coaches that were there? You know, to me, I think that maybe this is another play-on week for the Raiders. Then we can reevaluate from there.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think you're going to see a little momentum carried over with all we're hearing out of Las Vegas, where the boys are chilling. Of course, Adam Burke on a Tuesday. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. When we return, Berkey's got two college basketball plays tonight and what to expect a long basketball season over at VSiN.com. We continue Sharp Money.